Right away.
We're going to open informational hearing and open up the April 25th, 2017 House Vetch and Emergency Management. We've got a lot of good work to do today. I'm very excited. That's where we're going to start. To begin with, we're going to have informational discussion about seismic investments in schools, especially school districts that may or, well, likely weren't included in the 2007 windshield tour, and how we can help get them the assistance they need to be able to get into the seismic assessment program. So I'm going to invite up Mr. Michael Elliott and Lori Seidenspiel on the first panel, and then we'll invite up Gloria Zacharias and Ed Tabor in the second panel. The goal today, of course, is for those that are just tuning in, any school in the state of Oregon, especially the small ones, that has an interest in trying to get support and assistance in getting certified smart people to be able to tell them what condition their buildings are in. There's actually already a plan in place, a program operator, and a handy-dandy little form that they're going to go over today. So with that said, please take it away and introduce yourselves.
Chair and members of committee, Lori Satsko for the Oregon School Boards Association. Feel maybe a little out of order, thinking the history is behind us coming into this, but it'll all meld together nicely
meld
at the
together.
End. Thank you for allowing us to come up and testify and kind of walk through the process of the technical assistance program. So I am not the smart person, the certified smart person. To help with the reason that bill did not move forward, House Bill 2895. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say thank you to the legislature for that precedented investment in 2015 and $175 million for seismic. It was very important, and we'll be continuing to report out as that comes up again for additional funding as we get closer to the end. So I just wanted to say thank you and just get this moving and have Michael move on into the presentation.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Michael Elliott, Department of Education. I'm the School Facilities Coordinator of the Office of School Facilities. And I'm here to talk about ODE's program, the Technical Assistance Program, as to how school districts can get money to do an assessment for seismic fitness, if you will, of their buildings. So this is between Dogami, if you will, and Business Oregon. Dogami did a very, very brief assessment, kind of a walk around the building, what's going on. And then Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program, it's my understanding they have the real money, the $175 million, as to how much, you know, actually rehabilitating the programs or the buildings. My program is about getting school districts information so that they can then apply for the major money in the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program.
So before you begin, or before you continue,
yes,
for the 37-plus school districts that right now think they don't have anywhere to turn to get access to the larger pot of money, you are the doorway there.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, absolutely. We are open to all 197 districts, and as you'll find out, we're actually looking for the smaller districts. We give them preferences to ensure that they're going to have a better chance of getting the funding than a major district, say, like Portland or Salem-Keizer.
Thank you. Proceed. Yes.
So this is a brief overview of the program. The money for our assessments actually comes from a carve-out from the state school fund. So if you're not aware how the state school fund works, it's that very large number that's very contentious in the legislature. It represents a significant portion of your general fund budget. And once that number is decided, there are certain statutory carve-outs that come from that. So, for example, there's a talented and gifted specialists, the Department of Education, the Oregon School for the Deaf is funded. Some long-term care and treatment facilities are also funded, as well as this technical assistance program. For the 17-19 biennium, our budget will be $6 million for the entire biennium. Of that $6 million, it covers administration costs for this program, as well as the Oregon School Capital Improvement Matching Program. And then it also, again, covers the grants. And we're hoping to have about $5 million in grants to school districts for the 17-19 biennium. There are three types of grants that school districts can get. Facilities assessments, that's, I jokingly say, kicking the tires of the building. What's good, what's bad, what needs to be fixed, that sort of thing. Long-range facility planning. The goal of this is to get districts, big and small, looking to see How can I be smart about my facilities? You know, facilities age. So how am I going to be smart? How can I get better information? How can I strategically plan moving forward for my facilities? And then the most important for this committee is the seismic assessment. These grants are up to $25,000, and this is for a certified engineer, a seismic engineer, to go into a building, look at it in depth, and say, okay, you need to fix the roof and these two walls, and you need to change this vertical irregularity such that if you do that, your building has a better chance of meeting life safety standards. I'm not sure if the committee is aware. It's my understanding life safety standards are the building's not going to collapse and kill people in it. It'll, like, you know, do this or blow apart or something such that students and teachers can get out of the building safely and evacuate safely. So here is the application. The website for the application is right there at the top. Please note that the last application period was from March 15th to April 14th, so it has closed for this time. We will be making announcements of those districts that received an award from us later this week, actually. The next application period will be opening January 15th to February 15th next year, and it will be on an annual basis from then on. As you can see, it is a very simple application. It is, we tried to get to one page, but we need a little more information, so it's a two-page application. I met with superintendents over on the eastern side of the state at the Intermountain ESD, and they were saying it takes about an hour to fill out. So we're trying to make this very simple for school districts because we don't, how we determine who gets funding and who doesn't, because unfortunately we have more applications than we do have grants available, we do it on a preference point basis. And for the each of the three application types, so facility assessment, long-range facility planning, and then seismic, have different preference points, but they all have five preference points. And then we'll fund every district that had five preference points, and then we'll fund everybody with four, and then everybody with three, so forth and so on. If we can't fund everybody in a preference point, so all the threes, for example, we would then hold a lottery to see which would get a grant and which wouldn't. For seismic, we're targeting small districts. So districts under 2,500 ADMR. ADMR is average daily membership resident. It's how we count students for funding purposes. So we're really looking at the tiny districts. So for example, a district like Alcee, they would receive this preference point. Poverty rate has to be 25% or greater. Please note, this is the U.S. Census-based poverty rate. It is not the free and reduced lunch poverty rate. It is a different rate, but every district's on the same U.S. Census standard. So again, those districts with high poverty will get an additional preference point. If the district has not conducted an assessment for the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program, we're looking to them because they may not be able to afford the seismic assessment. So we want to give them preference so we can give them money so they can then access the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program. We do use RVS data for one of the preference points, and I simplified it, but it's basically, do they have the wrong construction type? Do they have some vertical irregularities? Is their building such that it is more prone to collapse than other types of building? Now, we know that at least 27 districts are not included in the RVS information, and so we go ahead and for those districts, if they have a building built before 1995, we give them the preference point. There's assumptions made that they're a very tiny district. They may not have had money to improve the building and look at seismic upgrades. These are not cheap. And we know that school budgets have been tight for the last few years. And so we just say, okay, we're going to go ahead and give you that preference point. So a district like Alcee, if their buildings were built before 1995, they would get this preference point, even if they're not on the RVS data set. And then, again, I'm kind of minimizing this, but districts in a high shaking zone. It's really a 0.6 on the mass spectral acceleration tables. There is a map that we've published. I apologize I didn't provide it with the information. There is a website linked to it on the application showing the committee. Basically, the western side of the state is in the high shaking zone. The eastern side, with some exceptions, is not. Again, targeting those districts to get them money who are most likely in need of seismic help to survive seismic events so that their students can get out safely. So those are our preference points. The application is simply to get that information to us. Questions 1 and 2 is basic district information we need to build a database. Every district has a 4-digit code assigned to them by Department of Education. Every district has a name. They just submit that stuff. Questions 3 to 7 is those preference points. What's their ADMR? What's their poverty rate? What's their, did they apply for a seismic rehabilitation grant? What's their RVS data? What's their seismic score? We have complete application instructions also on the website, also linked to on the application, that if they follow through and read carefully, they'll be able to fill this out with very little help from us. And of course, we are always willing and able to help districts if they have questions.
Chair Evan?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Two questions. One of the questions is that, first of all, on an annual basis or however you kind of prioritize this, do you ever have, how many schools or districts are going unserved? So that's the first question. Then the second question is on the preference points, are those weighted equally, or they, or do you have a, you know, like, or do you prefer if they're in a high shaken zone first, but not built 1995, because you may have buildings that were built in 99, before 1995 in the East Oregon area, but not in a high shaken zone. So how do you kind of delineate those priorities, sir?
Chair Evans, Representative Meek, to answer your first question, the districts that go unserved depends. The first application period, we had about, I believe, around 100, 110 applications, and we only had grants for 40. So two-thirds weren't served. This time around, we've had 58 applications. We're going to have grants for about 40 again. So most likely everyone will get some funding. So it depends on who shows up for that application period as to how that works. It's not something I can answer on an annual basis saying we're going to guarantee 50% or something like that. In answer to your second question, no, we do not weight the preference points. Like high shaking zone gets 2 points and building irregularity gets just 1 point. The reason why is that a small earthquake with a badly, I don't want to say badly constructed building, but a building that was constructed without thinking about earthquakes, that could cause just as much damage as a well-constructed building in a high shaking zone. So we really try to keep the preference points the same amount and give districts equal opportunity to receive the same amount of preference points.
Follow-up, Chair? Thank you, sir. Well, I can understand that, but I believe there's probably, I believe from the results or from the information I received, there's thousands of schools that are still going unassessed. They haven't gone, they haven't been assessed yet. And they could be in the basically the high shaking zones. And it would be, you know, to me, it would seem probably efficient to try to reach those schools first, if possible. So that's my only reason why I would probably think that, you know, waiting whether they were in a high shake, whether the probability that they would be in a catastrophic event, regardless of, you know, the age of structure of the building. But that's the reason I was asking. So.
Thank you. So, would you like me? I'm not sure if there's a question, but I'm happy to continue. So
I'm sorry. Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Meek, I do have an advisory group, and I'm happy to bring this to them. They are composed of engineers, architects, financial people, and a lot of school district personnel. So that's definitely a question that I would bring to them and get some information as to what they like. I do want to say I would really appreciate Dogami's help with the seismic standards and the seismic preference points. They've been very helpful, and I know they're very concerned about districts across the state. So they really did provide a lot of information to build the original preference points and seismic assessment standards. So,
thank you.
So, and then the second half of the application, so again, questions 3 through 7, just I need information so I can assign the preference points. Mm-hmm. Questions 8 through 19, who's your contact person and who is your person who's authorized to sign the contract? For small districts, most likely that's the same person. For bigger districts, it can be different, and we want to have both pieces of information. After that, they electronically sign and submit the application into us. We get all the applications, we build a database of assigned preference points, and then rank based on how much money we have to distribute that for that round of applications. So where it goes from there is that the school district receives a commitment of $25,000. They do have to sign a grant agreement with us for that. The grant agreement was developed with, in thanks part to the Department of Justice. It's been reviewed. We give them instructions on what specifically we're looking for in the grant agreement, and it details roles and responsibilities between the Department of Education and the school district. Yes?
Question on that, and this is great. One of the questions that we had heard from smaller school districts is, well, what contractors do this versus what don't? Do you happen to have a list or an approved group of contractors that do this and have some expertise?
Chair Evans, members of the committee, I do not have a certified list of contractors. ODE was not given any authority to provide certification for seismic assessments. We do have a list of contractors that we've received from Business Oregon that we would send out to districts, say, one of these has worked with the seismic rehabilitation grant program, so at least there's that information available, and we've been working
with them. If somebody asks you that via email, you'd be happy to send that list out?
Yes.
Great.
Yes, Chair Evans.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Evans. So the $25,000, I'm trying to decide, is that based on a figure based on amount of work that you expect to do? Is it based on just dividing up the amount of funds that are available? I'm trying to understand. What's the value or the reason for the $25,000?
Chair Evans, Representative Lively, there's two answers to that. One is a statutory limit of $25,000. But the task force that was creating this whole Office of School Facilities and all the programs, they had, again, engineers and architects on it, and they felt that $25,000 could get 3 to 4 buildings. So for a small district, this should cover the entire district. You know, for a district the size of Portland, it will be a help, but it will not cover the entire district. But the goal is to get 3 to 4 buildings.
Thank you.
That's very helpful.
So,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and just to, so there were districts that didn't know you had these funds, and I think there was a question that came up about sort of if they've done this very recently, some retroactivity about being able to help get those dollars.
Right. So, Chair Evans, Representative Parrish, we made the decision because the bill authorizing this program, the money went into effect the beginning of the 15-17 biennium, but we weren't ready with the program till a year in. For the first two rounds, if they had signed a contract after July 1, 2015 for this work, they could count that and we would pay for work already done. Moving forward, 17-19, we are not going to be doing that because we're trying to capture everybody who's already done it. Mm-hmm. And moving forward, they'll have a little more notice and can apply and then plan that way.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Representative Lewis, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions, and you may not be able to answer this, but we've heard off and on in the event of an earthquake that these buildings may still be standing but not be functional. What's the overall objective in a rehabilitation of a school?
Chair Evans, Representative Lewis, I believe that's going to be a Business Oregon, their seismic rehabilitation grant program, and their goals. That would be better addressed
okay.
to them. Sorry.
So, this is the first step along the process.
All right.
I'm the bad news person here. I get districts money to tell them how bad their buildings are. The good news follows with here's how we fix your buildings and what that standard looks like. So you start with the bad, end with the good. It works that way. So, again, it's on a reimbursement basis. They submit the final report to us. They submit invoices to us, and we pay them. Now, here's where I think the really good news is we worked, again, closely with DOGAMI, Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, and Business Oregon, and the standards set forth in our administrative rule are the minimum requirements for an application for the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program. So if they meet our standards, which they have to get the grant, they can turn around, use this assessment as a basis for a Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program application, and basically get everything paid for if it works out. They get the building paid for through that program, and they got the assessment paid for through our program. So we're really trying to make it easy on these really small districts that may not have any additional funds to, you know, make their buildings safe for students, you know, across the state. And so, and that's really, though, that becomes the district's option as to whether or not they want to move forward with that. But they do have the assessment, and they're ready to go with that information. And that's my program.
Well, before we get to some other questions, if there are any, I just want to thank you for putting it out there. For a lot of school districts that are having trouble just trying to keep the doors open, this discussion and the work that's been done and the advisory board and the priorities and everything else and the alignment so that once they get this, they can literally pivot and move the next step down the line. Thank you for the work that went into this. I know that generally when bills get passed, they aren't nicely aligned, so it takes a lot of work to make that happen. But the ability to not have to reinvent the wheel through House Bill 2895 and make sure that the school districts that need the assistance the most have at least a path forward is greatly appreciated. So thank you for that.
Chair Evans, thank you. And just thank you to the legislature for your foresight to create this program so we can help districts. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Next panel. I know we kind of went out of order, but now you get to give the 30,000-foot picture. So the folks that were tuning in today to find out how they get their help, now we get to hear how you're changing the face of Oregon. Come on forward, please.
Chair Evans, members of the committee, I am Gloria Zacharias, and I am the program manager for the Seismic Rehabilitation Program for Business Oregon.
And I'm Ed Tabor, Program Services Manager for Business Oregon.
Our application process for the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program is it has more pages than Michael's does, but we also try to make it as simple as we can. When the application is opened, when the application period is opened, which is when we have money, when there's going to be a bond sale, we base it on that. We don't like to have an open application process if there are no funds available at that time. We just completed awarding funds, as I'm sure you've all heard. So with that award announcement last Friday, that completes awarding all of the funds that you all generously approved to the program in, for this biennium. So we awarded 141 school projects and 47 emergency services projects. So when we have a grant opening, we post it on our website. All of the material are in that resource box. The application is there. The benefit cost analysis tool is there. There's information about what we're looking for with the engineering feasibility study, the assessment. There's guidance pieces for each of those. There's a memo on there about errors to avoid. There's a memo on there with tips to what gives you a good, solid application and what we're looking for. There's another slide that comes up later that I'll tell you that at the end of every round, we go back and look at all of our materials. We talk to the school districts. We take what they've said, and we try to make sure that we improve every round with the application, with what we're asking of them, and see if we can streamline it a little bit. We do a public notice to make sure that everybody knows that we're open and it's up there. I hold informational forums across the state. I try to go to the Oregon School Boards Association conference, at least one of them. I know Michael and I have both presented at several conferences together. We use their listservs. We use the school districts, the Department of Education's listserv. We use our own listserv. Our interested parties that have signed up independently to our listserv, we to anybody, any partner organization that I think will send out the notice, I send it to them. So we try to get the information out as widely as possible. And that's for both schools and emergency services. I know you're mostly focused on schools today, but just know that the same goes for all of the emergency services organizations also. We use the Office of Emergency Management's listserv. We use the Hazard Mitigation Manager's listserv. So anybody's listserv that I think we can jump on, we definitely get the information out to them. So that's where they go. They just go to the Business Oregon website, and every piece of information that they need is right there. Application submittals, it takes the application, the benefit cost analysis, and the engineering assessment. And those assessments, as you just heard from, can be paid by Michael's organization, or the school district can pay for them on their own. All of the what's required is exactly the same. The Department of Education worked with our department to make sure that what we were looking for was what they were looking for, and some of his advisory people on his advisory committee are the same as on our advisory committee that governs this program. The submission has to include a hard copy and a digital copy. Most of these submissions are way too large for email, so we ask them to either send a disk or a thumb drive. We'll take it either way, whatever's easiest, because we do post those on a website for all of our advisory committee, and it makes it easier if we already have them electronically. They send it to me, and I'm always available to answer questions via email, or they can call me, or they can say, can you come out? We have a consultant who did the benefit cost analysis for us, and he is also available to answer questions and to come out. He and I have gone to several school districts, personally met with them and their engineer, their project manager, and answered questions. We try to provide as much technical assistance as possible because our goal is we want them to be successful. We want them to get awarded a grant for this program. The review process, the Business Oregon staff, myself, and another staff member review every single application that is submitted. And if they're eligible and they're complete, it goes on to our benefit cost analysis consultant and his subcontractors. He has two engineers on a subcontract that are out of Washington. He's out of California, so we try to make sure everything is unbiased, third party. They also review them. If the engineering assessment, for some reason, the engineer feels it might be missing something or it isn't going to bring the building to either immediate occupancy or life safety standards, he works with that applicant. He calls that engineer. We try to have as much time as possible. Sometimes it gets a little squeezed in if we don't get the information back immediately, but we do try to work with everybody. And if at all possible, if it's a simple error that we can correct, our benefit cost analysis consultant is brilliant. He designed the tool. He can generally look and see where the mistake is quickly, and if he can fix it quickly, we just fix it. Otherwise, we contact the school district or the emergency services applicant, and we work with them as much as possible. Once everything has been thoroughly reviewed, we put it on our website for our committee. They review each and every application, and they make the funding decisions. So that just happened last week. The advisory committee, it has two subcommittees. There's representatives from schools that represent schools. They meet and discuss the school projects. The emergency services folks meet and talk about those projects. And then on the third day, on Friday, the full committee comes together and they vote on the recommendations together, all of them. So that just happened last Friday. Award notifications. The approved recipients are notified with an award letter, press release, and of course it's posted on the Business Oregon website. All of the school award letters are out, and I believe half of the emergency services award letters are out or in the mail today. So that's a fairly quick process. The ones that don't receive an award are also given. Every application who did not receive an award is sent information on how to strengthen their application for the next round. I either send them that in an email, or I send them that in a letter, or I do both. And I'm, again, always happy to come out and talk to them specifically about where the errors were, what went wrong, how they can strengthen it, how they can be more successful in the next round. In this last round, there were two school districts and one community college that did not receive a grant. Other than that, everyone who applied because of your generosity received an award, at least one award.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on the previous slide, it talks about the program being structured as a reimbursement program. So I'm trying to understand, especially for small districts, from a cash flow standpoint, does that mean so they have the contract signed and they don't get reimbursed until they've paid the contractors in that, or they get reimbursed? I'm trying to understand from a cash flow how this works for districts.
Go ahead.
Chair Evans, Representative Lively, thank you for the question. It is a reimbursement. However, they don't have to pay the invoice. They can submit the invoice on a reimbursement form to us. And it has been, our fiscal department is extremely efficient, and it's been where if we approve a reimbursement, I sign it, our management signs it, it's generally within 48 hours of those two signatures. They have the money. It's all electronic. We send it to them either in their LGIP account or into an account that they've specified beforehand with their contract.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Future improvements, as I said at the beginning, after each round, we look at the process, we get together, and we talk to the committee. And there were some suggestions on Friday that we're putting into place. We're already doing the update to the application materials and the instructions based on feedback that we received. What's new for this round is we're going to do a frequently asked questions section and put that on our Seismic webpage on the Business Oregon website, so that anybody who's asked me a question or anybody, the consultant a question or the engineer a question will have, they can read that. Of course, they can still call or they can still email, but at least it will be out there when they're burning the midnight oil. Maybe that'll help them. And again, every applicant who did not receive an award is sent information on how to strengthen their application for the next round. And the thing that I'm most excited about that was discussed with the advisory committee, and they were very excited about it too, is we're putting together a one-day training for engineers. Chair Evans, you had asked about a list. The only list that I have really is engineers who've submitted assessments in the past. But what we're hoping to do with this one-day training is do in person, but it's also going to be videoed so that we can put it on the Business Oregon website so people can watch it if they weren't able to attend. And the morning part of it will be about the engineering assessment itself, what we're looking for, how they can make it stronger. And then the afternoon will be on the benefit cost analysis tool, where that information is, how they already have that information, and how to plug it in. And I think with those two things, we're adding one piece to our application, which will be a checklist. It's not designed yet, so I'm not exactly sure, but it should just be three columns. It's going to list all of the seismic deficiencies of the building based on their seismic assessment. It will list all of the fixes for those deficiencies and where we can find it in their budget, because that's been the hardest thing sometimes as we review these. We can see the deficiencies, but we can't always tell where the fixes are and if they've included it in their budget. So I think with that improvement, we will come a long way to not having to having solid cost estimates.
Great.
And with that, I think that we're done.
Any questions? Yes, sir.
Thank you. So I don't recall how long this program's been in place. How long have we been doing this?
Chair Evans, Representative Lively, since 2009, okay. our program, our department has had it since January 1st of 2014.
Okay. And if I could, Mr. Chair, so you keep, I assume you have a list of all the projects that have been funded. So I don't know then if the school district, I'm trying to understand, so out of all the potential projects, how many projects have been funded versus, kind of goes back to the money thing. I know I appreciate what the money drives it, but I'm just trying to get if somebody has kind of a sense. So we funded this many, so that means those schools or emergency facilities meet whatever the standard is we established. But what's the universe out there since then?
Chair Evans, Representative Lively, that's a really difficult question to answer because, you know, not every building that gets retrofitted comes through our program.
True.
And there originally in 2007 was the assessment of, you know, the one that was done by Dogami. Mm-hmm. And it has lists of, I believe, thousands of
schools or
yes.
something like that.
And we have, with this last, you know, grant award in this biennium, we awarded 13 school projects in 2014, and then 2016, 41, and 2017, 100.
Yeah.
So you can see, you know, we've made a small dent, but we're getting there. Mm-hmm. We're getting there. And on the emergency services side, I believe we made 25 awards in 2014, and we just made 47 awards. And those were the two times when there was emergency services funds
Great.
Available.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Sir? Anything to add?
I don't have anything to add.
Okay. Well, first of all, again, having been involved on the periphery of this from when it was started to now, I'm very impressed with where we are right now. I think the cross-pollination between the engineers and the emergency folks and the education folks, everybody communicating, having everything aligned, quite frankly, this is how government's supposed to work. So I don't want to upset the apple cart or anything. What I do, if you could, perhaps, as you do the after-action, what I assume an after-action review, now that everything's been sent out, if there are additional fixes or things that would be easier downrange or up river in terms of methodology, things that contractors comment on as far as a challenge in terms of maybe the transfer of dollars or something like that. If there's anything that are roadblocks in making this as effective as it looks on paper, please let us know so we can try to work on that.
Thank you, Chair.
The goal here is to try to help as many school districts as we can with the scarce resources we have. Clearly, you're doing that. I just want to make sure that there aren't other obstacles that are not exactly government in the way. Okay?
Will do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So thank you for the presentation, and hopefully people are watching today, and you'll be getting a lot of emails and phone calls and interest. So thank you.
Thank you for your time.
We're going to be closing the public information hearing on the seismic program. We're going to be opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 61A. Mr. Volk, please explain to us Senate Bill 61A.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 61A adds 11 new designees to the list of state agencies, entities, and officials required to coordinate emergency preparedness and response with the Office of Emergency Management. Oregon law requires 22 entities to designate an individual with the authority to allocate resources to act as a liaison with the Office of Emergency Management regarding emergency preparedness and response. Senate Bill 61A adds 11 more designees from the following entities, and there's 11. I won't read them. It's in the bill, but there's 11 more added. This has gone through the Senate. The final vote in the Senate was 29 ayes, one excused. It has minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay. We invite Mr. Phelps to come up and explain what's going on.
Chair Evans, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Phelps. I'm the director of the Oregon Military Department's Office of Emergency Management, and I am here today to provide testimony in support of Senate Bill 61. Senate Bill 61 does, in fact, add 9 executive agencies to the Oregon Emergency Response System, or OERS, Council, as well as the Office of the Secretary of State and the Oregon Travel Information Council. Each of these agencies already has an emergency support function or ESF lead or support role or provides ancillary support like the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. In addition, each of these agencies will be included in the governor's disaster cabinet to provide recommendations to the governor on policy direction, resource coordination, and recovery efforts during and immediately following a disaster. One takeaway from last summer's Cascadia Rising exercise was that in a disaster, every local, tribal, and state agency effectively becomes an emergency management agency. Adding these agencies to the OERS Council is not necessarily a panacea, but is certainly a positive step towards developing the robust, detailed, and comprehensive plans we need to leverage more of what state government can do to prepare for, mitigate against, respond to, and recover from any disaster, regardless of cause. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of Senate Bill 61, and that concludes my prepared remarks.
Questions? Okay, well, I'd like to commend the folks who put this together. In 2007, during Top Off 4, we recognized the value of far more agencies that have things that they can bring to the fight when necessary in response or recovery. In the intervening years, some of those agencies have not exactly been as excited about being involved. I certainly think that adding them to the OERS Council and helping motivate them appropriately is a great idea. So thank you very much for bringing this forward. I look forward to moving this forward with all due speed. Any other questions for the director? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I have one more name, Mr. Connect. Would you like to come up and share your thoughts, please?
Yes, my name name is Mark Knick, and Representative Evans and the committee. I support this bill, and I have come to you before, and I have asked Paul at, in this emergency preparedness, I know there's no guarantees, but how would you know where group homes are and nursing homes and so on? Is there any guarantee you could get to those people?
Go ahead, Vice Chair Escobar.
Yes, we have emergency management in Medford itself, and the local folks are going to have to react to local issues, and then we go on a broader scale on the county, and then we go on a broader scale of the state, and then the federal. So it'll have to be local people doing things for local people.
But I understand because I have gone to the fire department here in different ones, and I know because of privacy issues, the only people that should be allowed to have those addresses are the emergency people.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yes. In Marion County, as of at least 2 years ago, but in Marion County, their emergency action planning had identified where group homes were, had identified where areas of special concern might be. So if roads are passable, if people can get to them,
yeah,
then again, barring too high a water or too hot a fire, yes, people should be able to be assisted during times of disaster.
Yeah.
But what Representative Escobar is saying is that the speed with which that will happen,
yeah,
will be something that people need to be as resilient as possible, because there aren't enough resources on the planet to be able to get as fast as we would expect.
Yes.
But I think the answer is yes. It just may take a little bit of time.
We also have a CAD system in my municipality that they can go to any address. They can tell you exactly what it is. They can get a printout of what that building is, infrastructure and everything, just by that CAD system.
Marion County's not quite to the level that Medford is.
Well, someday you'll catch up.
But Marion County and Polk County would very much like to get to that level sometime, I'm certain.
The reason I ask that is because I don't have the money or the resources. We're going to have our DAV convention over in Bend, Oregon.
Yes.
I do not have the resources to go to the convention, but they're going to bring me some materials back, uh-huh, and I'm going to be trained as assistant to the service officer for our DAV chapter.
Well, we're going to need everybody involved in the process to make it work. Thank you. So I see no more names on the list. I'm going to close the public hearing. And what I'd like to do, I know Representative Parrish is working on a small challenge that popped up today. If it's acceptable to the committee, I'd like to work this bill next Tuesday.
Sure.
I want to make sure she has an opportunity to weigh in on this. But we are going to open up a public hearing on House Bill, you guessed it, Senate Bill 62. Mr. Volk.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 62 modifies and expands the Interstate Mutual Assistance Compacts used by local governments to include state and tribal governments. It renames compacts the Oregon Resource Coordination Assistance Agreements. This bill requires state government participation, permits tribal governments to opt in, and local governments to opt out via resolution or ordinance, directs the Office of Emergency Management to develop, adopt, and disseminate procedures and guidelines for implementation. Oregon law currently provides for the state's participation in an interstate compact for emergency management assistance, as well as local governments' use of intrastate mutual assistance agreements to enable flexible and responsible sharing of resources. Senate Bill 62 expands the use of intrastate mutual assistance compacts to include state and tribal governments along with local governments, and renames such agreements again as the Oregon Resource Coordination Assistance Agreements. This measure requires state governments to participate while allowing local and tribal governments the discretion to opt out and opt in, respectively. There is no fiscal expenditure. There's no revenue impact. This vote in the Senate was ayes 29 and 1 excused.
Mr. Director, would you like to join us? Welcome back.
Chair Evans, members of the committee, my name is still Andrew Phelps, and I am still the Oregon Office of Emergency Management Director within the Oregon Military Department. And I am here today to provide testimony in full support of Senate Bill 62. Mutual aid occurs every day in every corner of the state of Oregon in emergency and disaster response. And in fact, it's a cornerstone of effective emergency and disaster response. Just over 2 years as the director of the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, I've seen time and time again the willingness of public safety agencies across all levels of government in this state respond to the call for help from their neighbors. There's also been times, however, when atypical assistance was needed or a resource was required from a jurisdiction on the other side of the state where no existing mutual aid agreements were in place to expedite that resource where it could be most useful. Senate Bill 62 more closely aligns mutual aid in Oregon with model interstate mutual aid legislation guidance put forth by the National Emergency Management Association and has already been used successfully across the country. Senate Bill 62, as Mr. Volk enumerated, will offer a few yet significant changes to ORS 402.200 and the way mutual aid works in the state of Oregon. Most significantly, Senate Bill 62 automatically includes all state agencies, requires all local jurisdictions to be a part of the interstate mutual aid unless they opt out via resolution, and provides tribal governments with the opportunity to opt in to mutual aid. It also directs the Office of Emergency Management to develop guidelines and procedures for requesting and providing the assistance and any other guidelines or procedures necessary to implement the agreement. And if passed, certainly we will work collaboratively with our stakeholders and partners across Oregon to develop those processes. In emergencies and disasters, Oregonians find a way to meet challenges, and we help our neighbors. Senate Bill 62 provides a framework to formalize that help and provide some degree of peace of mind to those requesting and certainly those providing that assistance. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon in support of Senate Bill 62, and that concludes my formal prepared remarks.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not understanding the ability to opt out. I appreciate the agreements in that, but why the provision that the local governments could choose to opt out?
Chair Evans, Representative Lively, it's a recommendation by the National Emergency Management Association to give that as an option so that we're not forcing local jurisdictions to do anything. Quite frankly, even with mutual aid, you're not required to send assistance. If you have it available and you want to send it, you can utilize this agreement. Just because a jurisdiction is a part of the agreement, should a tribe, for example, opt in, they're under no requirement to provide resources. It just gives them that ability to do so.
Thank you.
Other questions? Again, I'd like to applaud the effort on this. One of the things that I've been most concerned about over the last many years is that as we continue our wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places to be filled in later, we've been sending large numbers of National Guardsmen and women away, which during times of disaster, they have often been a rapid response support team. So having this assurance, strengthening it, making it a little more robust, modeling it on the national approach, I think will be helpful during those times where we are missing helicopters, missing folks that we can throw into the fight, especially during fire season and other types of things. So very much appreciate this, bringing this bill forward. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Connect, did you want to come and testify on this, or did you...
to say, but other than I want to ask you a couple of questions. I support both of these bills, and what could we as a common citizen do to help in natural disasters, sir?
Well, first I need you to state your name again for the record.
Mark Knick.
Okay. I think that there are a number of things that every citizen can do. Number one, to follow up on what Representative Esquivel has commented on, is be ready yourself, be as resilient as possible. And number two, there are any number of organizations from CERT, Community Emergency Response Team, to support organizations for volunteer, fire, police, et cetera, that are out there. If nothing else, since the director happens to be in the room, I would ask him or some organizations that are closely geographically related to here, where there might be the greatest need. He would probably have a better answer than I would. Yeah. But it's a good question, and it's a question I hope every citizen in Oregon asks.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair Evans. Mr. Connect, like the chair said, that a lot of the communities have these community emergency response teams and they're training volunteers to hopefully we start in our local communities at the really, you know, minute level of neighborhoods, you know. Maybe the 10 neighbors around me that I'm going to help reach out to them, because a lot of them may be very vulnerable. But it's only going to be through volunteering and helping folks get the training they need to help, you know, their local communities save life and secure, you know, secure folks, and then wait for, you know, if we have a major disaster, it's going to be a little bit of time for folks to get to us. So I think we're working on some really good programs to help, you know, communities support themselves first,
yeah.
And because that's, you know, truly that's the only way we really can respond properly to a major catastrophe. And then slowly time, people will work on our sewer lines and our water and food and all those things. But
Representative Escobar.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. In my opinion, sir, it'll be neighborhood looking out for neighborhood. They will be together and they will have to rely upon one another. I would hope that we would be able to educate people on being some sort of preparedness at least a couple of weeks or a month. I would like to see that happen throughout the whole state of Oregon, neighborhood to neighborhood.
Thank you. Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a number of cities that have started a program called Map Your Neighborhood, and I believe Marion County is also doing that now. And what that does, if you're not familiar with it, is it sets up a program in a neighborhood where you identify a vulnerable population, you create a packet, you get a card that you can put on the window that identifies a specific need that a person may have for assistance. And the whole idea behind it is to train somebody that knows how to shut off the propane or natural gas, somebody that has medical training and background, and so on, so that that neighborhood can be self-sufficient for a period of time until first responders can help.
Yeah.
So if you're not familiar with that program, you might want to check with Marion County Emergency Management. I think they're involved in it now.
I might bring that idea to the neighborhood association I belong to.
Yeah, that's a good one. Thank you.
And Paul, when you were Representative Evans, years, but wasn't it back in the 90s we had all that flooding, and you were you in the National Guard at the time?
Well,
or you were in the Air Force. I keep thinking, I don't know why I do that, but yeah.
96 flood, I was actually in other countries doing other things, but in the 2007 flood and disaster.
Well, anyway, I want to commend our friend, the former general of the National Guard, General Raymond Reese, did a very beautiful job of commanding the National Guard of this state.
Yes, and the military department can certainly convey that to him. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 62. Like the first one, I'd like to roll that to Tuesday for an actual work session. I want to make sure Representative Parrish can take part in that.
Sure.
Before we close out today, I'd like Mr. Volk to tell us what's on the agenda for Thursday. It's going to be a little bit busy, with the understanding we're going to try to get a lot done in the first hour just in case we have to go back to the floor. So I want to emphasize we will have committee if there is an afternoon floor session at 4. We will have committee. We're going to try to knock out the first hour.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. We, of course, Thursdays is our vet days. We plan to have an informational meeting and talk about the vet resource centers at various universities and try to get a better feel for where they are now and where they'd like to go if there's additional funds. Jock Mills and some other people will be coming. In addition, we have three bills, Senate Bill 79, Senate Bill 143A, and Senate Bill 992.
We got 56.
Okay. And change in plan. I understand that Representative Parrish is aware of the bills and prepared to vote, so let's do the people's business if we're all right with that. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 61A. Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 61A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves Senate Bill 61A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, Sky, please call the roll.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Excused.
Vice Chair Escobar.
Aye.
Chair Evans.
Aye. Motion passes, and Representative Lively, would you like to carry this?
I like the number.
Okay.
61.
All right, we'll do that. And we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 62. Representative Escobar. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 62 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves Senate Bill 62 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any questions about the Interstate Compact and all that type of stuff? Mutual assistance. Seeing none, Sky, please call the roll.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Excused.
Vice Chair Escobar.
Aye.
Chair Evans.
Aye. Representative Lewis, would you mind putting that one forward for us?
Certainly.
Thank you very much. All right, seeing no additional business, thank you very much for your time. We are adjourned for the day.
Good job, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir.
We are adjourned for the day.
Good job, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir.